Yeah, baby, he is on fire, and so am I. It's episode 157 of Ask the Inspector on May 7th, 2024. Jeff Norman with our favorite weapons inspector, Scott Ritter, who just published a new post on our Substack. And you don't need to remember the Substack URL anymore. It's all at our website, scottritter.com. Nice and easy for you. And Scott also released a video commentary about Georgia, and some of you may have noticed the wrong video was posted earlier today. That was my fault, and I apologize, but the correct one has been uploaded. Was it Maverick who noticed that I uploaded the wrong video?
Maverick noticed. This is why I hire him for security. When I played it, he barked out, "That's Korea, you idiot! That's Korea! It's supposed to be Georgia!" So,
well, you know, they're both countries. Other than that, I think they both have vowels and consonants in the name.
Yeah, but Maverick doesn't like Korean food. He likes Georgian food. So he got he thought he was getting a Georgian deal meal. But all right, there it is, Maverick. You're 5 seconds of fame. You're an idiot, dog. So yeah, he just wants to sit here like this all day.
That's
long.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, you got this. Somebody got the cat today. You're welcome. Thanks for buying it, and thanks for supporting us. Why don't you send a picture of you wearing it, and then you can be our model. All right. So what's the story on this article and the video?
Well, before we do that, I just want to say that Angel Fursley is back in the hospital, apparently. and so I want to just send out the... she sent me a very nice email after our run-in last episode, where he said his whole purpose was just to trigger me, and it worked. So, you know, so he triggered me, and he got the result. And I hope that the result wasn't so overwhelming that it put him back in the hospital. But
so is it just a coincidence that he's going into the hospital, or you think you might have traumatized him?
No, I think it's a coincidence. I'm not gonna put that burden on me. But but to Angel Firstly's girls out there who are communicating, know that he's in our hearts and in our prayers, and we wish him a speedy recovery, because he's been a friend of the show. I've got his Marine Corps flag right behind me.
All right, and
Angel Firstly. So.
Right. I think the surgery, I've been in touch with him too. I think he said the surgery is Friday, but some pre-operation stuff going on now, I think. So let's keep those updates coming, Angels girls. I don't know if they want to be named, so we'll just say.
Well, now we get back to the article and the, excuse me. This is probably when you get old, Jeff. I reached around for the flag.
That hurt you? You got injured?
Yeah, I got a cramp. It's like, I'm sitting here cramping up in the middle of the show. I guess stretching, yoga, Pilates, something, more than what I'm doing. But I guess lifting weights just isn't the answer. You must throw in a flexibility program. But the article, first of all, the name of the article is derived from a dance that's done. It's a Georgian national dance, one of several, but this one is a famous one because, frankly speaking, as somebody who's seen the Georgian National Ballet perform it live, it is just a thrilling dance. It's the Kurumi, and it's a story, a tale of battle. A scout goes out, finds the enemy village, then they approach the village. There's a battle scene, dramatic dancing. And then the Georgians, of course, emerge victorious. And for a Georgian to watch this, I would imagine that it engenders a feeling of national pride, both in the grace and beauty of the performers, and then the notion that the Georgians are a virile nation capable of defending themselves, etc. The reason why I picked this is that right now, as we speak, and I mentioned this, it's the start off of the video that I put out. There's a coup d'etat taking place in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia today, sponsored by the United States. In fact, it's the third coup that's been run by the United States against Georgia since 1921. It's part of an ongoing process of regime change that's been, the United States has been spearheading since 2012, when the current political party, Georgia Dream, won a national election. They have won three elections since then. In October, they have a fourth one coming up, and the United States doesn't want them to win the fourth election. And so the United States is using what we call soft power. That is, we infuse hundreds of millions of dollars into programs using non-governmental organizations and SMOs, which I had to look up and now I've forgotten, but it's like a social movement organization or something of that nature. But we've poured hundreds of millions of dollars over the years into these programs designed, and what we're trying to do is reshape Georgian society. In effect, it's a huge bribe. You create these NGOs, you create these think tanks, you create these institutions where people have their sinecures. The youth gets sent off to be educated abroad. And then they come back believing in the European Union, and they believe in NATO and the American way. But it's a heroin. I mean, it's basically all we're doing is getting them addicted on, a supply of cash that in the end is unsustainable. And we have no desire to sustain it. We only want to achieve regime change for one purpose. We want the Georgia Dream Party out because they don't want to go to war against Russia. Georgia Dream, just so everybody understands, they are excited about the potential of becoming part of the European Union. They consider Georgia to be a European nation, and they want to be part of the European Union. Just a hint to all the Georgians out there, Europe doesn't want you to be a member of the European Union, and you will never be a member of the European Union. They just float that out there as a little carrot and stick to get you guys doing what they want you to do. Just like NATO. NATO invited Georgia to join in 2008. Russia has said no to this. Georgia can never qualify to be a member of NATO because, like Ukraine in the situation with Crimea, Georgia has outstanding territorial issues, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, the breakaway republics. And Georgia can't join NATO because of these outstanding issues, because if Georgia did join NATO with these outstanding issues, Article 5 of the NATO Charter could be invoked almost immediately. And then next thing you know, NATO finds itself automatically at war with Russia. So it's just, I trained my dog so that when they hear Russia, they overreact because they're Russophobic. But I have no idea what's going on outside. Maybe a FedEx man is delivering a package. But the fact of the matter is, Georgia will never be a member of NATO. They will never be a member of the European Union. And the European Union knows they will never be, and NATO knows they will never be. This is purely a game being played to lure the Georgians into, doing what the West wants. The Georgia Dream Party is led by a man named Bidzina Ivanishvili, and he's a billionaire. He earned his money doing Russian minerals and Russian banking in the 1990s, in the wild, wild west of the Russian economy back there, and he made a lot of money. And now he returned to Georgia to pick up the pieces of the disaster that was Mikhail Saakashvili's presidency, the man who came to power in the Rose Revolution in 2004, I believe, and then stayed on until 2012. He's also the guy that got Georgia involved in a short four-day war with Russia, which they lost decisively. Ivanishvili, again, is pro-West, but he also is pro-Russia, meaning he wants Georgia to find a way to balance between the two so that they don't go to war. To show you the success of Ivanishvili's thinking, Georgia was, the West demanded that Georgia get involved in the sanctioning of Russia after the Russian military incursion into Ukraine, and Georgia refused. The European economy is tanking as we speak, contracting, shrinking, deindustrializing, the whole works. The Georgian economy, however, is growing at a rate of 10.2% per year for the last 2 years. Sort of shows the wisdom of the Georgia Dream program. Growing economy, prosperity, peace is breaking out all over. They don't want to end that by going to war. So what Georgia Dream has done is, you know, right now they hold a comfortable lead in the polls. Right now, I think if there was an election today, Georgia Dream is polling at around 51%, and the next party, the UNM, is polling it in the 23%. But the fear is that the U.S. and the European Union will flood Georgia with money, and you know, the Georgia Dream party may find themselves outspent, and as a result, could lose the election. And just to make it clear, if Georgia loses the election, they'll go to war with Russia, and then Russia will destroy Georgia like they've destroyed Ukraine. Literally what the West wants to have happen. They don't care about Georgia. I'm trying to tell all the Georgians I can, the West doesn't care about you. They really don't. They want you to die for them, just like the Ukrainians did. Right now, Georgia is a peaceful land, prosperous economy, growing economy. Things could be nice. And they don't have to be nice with the European Union. Again, they don't want you. You're never going to be a member. You're never going to be a member. It will never happen. So stop living in a fantasy world and live with reality. And the reality is you will prosper if you learn how to live in, you know, peace and joint prosperity with Russia. But the West doesn't want that. And so this election in October is a big deal. So Georgia Dream, in order to ensure that they aren't outspent and have the election stolen from them by foreign money, sought to pass a Foreign Agent Registration Act, FARA, just like we have in the United States. You know, if you take a lot of money, in the case of Georgia, the threshold is 20% or more of your income comes from foreign sources, you have to register as a foreign agent. That doesn't mean that you can't do business. It just means you have to say, I'm a foreign agent, this is the money, so that everybody, when they hear you speak, goes, you're a foreign agent. You're working for the United States. You're working for the European Union. And more importantly, who are you working for? Oh, you're working for the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a CIA front. You're about regime change. So now when the Georgian comes in and says, hi, I'm with the following non-governmental organization, everybody gets to say, yeah, but you work for the National Endowment for Democracy. You're not really a Georgian. You're not promoting Georgian values. Get the hell out of here. And if that's, because that's exactly what would happen if they were called upon to be fully transparent. So all of these NGOs have gone into a panic mode. They can't allow this law to pass. So they are demonstrating, and they've made their goals clear. It's not peaceful demonstrations. These are going to become violent. They're looking to recreate the events of the Maidan coup that took place in Kiev in February of 2014. And it's worse than that. The president of Georgia, Georgia has a parliamentarian government. The prime minister is the head of the legislative branch. The executive branch is the president, who's pretty much a figurehead, has some powers, but she is the commander in chief. She's also a French citizen who became the president. It's crazy. And so she's promoting purely EU-US agenda. So the president on Armed Forces Day got before the Georgian army and said, swear to God, remember who trained you, remember who pays for you. That's the United States. And you remember whose side you are on when the time comes to stand up and defend Georgian values. She's basically telling the army to rise up against Georgia Dream, which is the constitutionally mandated and elected government of Georgia. Now, what's interesting, the prime minister spoke right after her, and he wouldn't even use her name. He welcomed everybody. He said, and you'll notice I didn't mention a name because that person is a traitor who has committed treason on stage here tonight, and you need to treat her as such. So the prime minister is calling the president a traitor as the president is encouraging the army to rise up against the Georgia Dream Party if there's violence in the streets. And there's going to be violence in the streets. They are actively, the National Endowment for Democracy, again, is actively pushing a movement whose symbol is a Molotov cocktail. We threw it is the name of it. And they're bragging how last year they threw a Molotov cocktail, and now they're saying we're going to throw a whole bunch more. Georgia's going to have a long, hot, and bloody summer. And I think the reason why it's important for us is that, you know, if the government is overthrown, if they are forced out of office by the violence or they lose at the election, this war in Ukraine will expand to Georgia. The United States will find itself with another proxy conflict. And sadly, Georgia is a nation of only 3.5 million people. and they will lose a whole bunch of people and they will be destroyed. And this is just another pressure point that doesn't need to happen. Another nation America is trying to destroy in their global chess game against Russia. You shouldn't be playing chess against Russians to begin with. It's not a good idea. They're better at the game than we are. Play them in checkers or something, but don't play them in chess. But anyways, this is it. And as I said before, this issue is very near and dear to me because my wife is from Georgia and she's from Sukhumi. Sukhumi was taken over by Abkhazian rebels back in 1993. Her parents were compelled to flee along with 250,000 other Georgians. Most of them have not been allowed to return home. Many of them are starting to die off like Marina's parents. And my wife would like to go back to Georgia before her time comes. She would like to go back and show our daughters where she grew up, to show them her homeland. And she can't do that right now. And it's frustrating because when I look at all these idiots that fly the EU flag, and these are Georgians, they're flying the EU flag and the Ukrainian flag before they fly the Georgian flag, which tells you how warped their thinking is. They don't know anything about Sukhumi. They don't care. They are purely promoting a European agenda. So this is, as somebody who knows how important Sukhumi is to, many Georgians, and this is an important issue. And so that's why I wrote the article. That's why I did the video.
Okay. And for those of you who like to consume Scott's analysis in video form, again, it's all at the website, scottritter.com. There's a section devoted to video commentaries. The first one there is U.S. coup d'etat in Georgia. And I don't want to spend too much time doing this, but just really quickly, I want to give you a sense of how it's very easy to see everything Scott does on the website. There's recent episodes of Ask the Inspector. There's all the recent Substack posts. There's the Scott Ritter Show, which streams Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And there's a collection of Scott's appearance on various other podcasts, such as George Galloway's and Judge Knapp's. So check it out.
I just want to promote the Scott Ritter Show for tomorrow. I had a very interesting interview today with a man who was the head of the emergency services, the fire brigade of Odessa, in May of 2014. He's the guy who responded to the trade union building when it was set on fire. And the truth of what happened is not widely known. And he gave a very detailed rundown on what in effect was arson and murder on the part of the Ukrainian nationalists, the Azov, people who became the Azov Battalion. And you can hear about the bravery. This is a man who, together with his other firefighters, saved 300 people's lives by running into a burning building filled with toxic gas and getting these people out and then shielding them from a mob that wanted them dead. And because of his hero, he said in the show, the only thing he and his fellow firefighters are guilty of is not dying, because they were supposed to die. They weren't supposed to live. So if you want to know the truth about what happened in Odessa in May of 2014, which is one of the major events that led to the decision by the Donbas to break free, the Ukrainian government to bomb, to start this war that is now raging in Ukraine. What happened on May 2nd, 2014 in Odessa is central to this. And I just had an interview that you're not going to see anywhere else. So I would recommend highly people watching it tomorrow night.
Okay. And in addition to the channels that are flashing on the screen right now, it's also going to be streaming on Twitch and on our website, scottritter.com. All right, let's get to the questions from our beloved audience. This is the lightning round, which we do every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less. The first question is from Fatima in California. What's going on between Saudi Arabia, the U.S., and Israel, and how will it affect the Palestinians?
Well, if you read the headlines, what's going on is that Saudi Arabia and the United States are negotiating a new security pact that seems to be linked to, or at least take its cue from, historical pacts where the United States guarantees the security of Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. And in exchange for that, Saudi Arabia will normalize relations with Israel and everything will be hunky-dory going forward. This is something that the Israelis desperately want, the United States wants. But the curious thing is, does Saudi Arabia want it? I have yet to see an official statement from MBS, the Crown Prince. To me, this seems more about somebody putting this out there and promoting it to put pressure on Saudi Arabia than Saudi Arabia's real policy. You know, Saudi Arabia just brokered a peace deal with Iran. I mean, China brokered it between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Saudi Arabia joined BRICS. They're pivoting in that direction. The largest, Saudi Arabia sells more oil to China than they do the United States. It just doesn't seem right. It doesn't smell right that Saudi Arabia is suddenly going to pivot back to the United States after making such a concerted effort to pivot away from the United States. So I take what I'm reading with a grain of salt until I see something official, until I see the United States and Saudi Arabia sitting down, signing a treaty, or hear people talking about the imminence of such a treaty. Until then, I'm taking this one with a heavy grain of salt because it flies in the face of the direction that Saudi Arabia seemed to be headed in. So that's my answer.
Next question is from Steve G. in Portsmouth, United Kingdom. Has Switzerland really stolen Russians' money? And if so, who will continue using Swiss banks?
Well, they've frozen the money. And what they're doing is they are, when you have that much money in the bank, I mean, my retirement plan is contingent upon having $14 billion in the bank. Then I could just live off the interest, which when it's $14 billion, I mean, what do you make, a couple hundred million a year? If I can't live off a couple hundred million a year, there's a big problem. So, so Russia has assets. They've been frozen. What Europe is doing, I think Switzerland's taking the lead from this, is that they're not touching the principal, which is just frozen, but they're taking the profits. That is that money, which grows from the interest rates. And that money is being taken and used to fund efforts. It's still theft. I mean, it's 100% theft, but they're not calling it theft. I think this whole concept of freezing Russian assets by Switzerland, by the European Union, by the United States, not only will backfire, but is backfire. And I think you're seeing, this action leads to an overall retreat from traditional financial relationships that existed before the Russians went into Ukraine, that were premised on the notion of the American dollar being the reserve currency of the world. I don't think anybody wants the American dollar as the reserve currency anymore. There's some people that have to have it because, in many cases, that's the only option they have. But, again, Saudi Arabia, BRICS, BRICS is talking about developing its own reserve currency equivalents. And if they do that and they successfully start to divorce from the dollar around the world, it's going to lead to, not only the collapse of the dollar, but the collapse of the American economy and any economies attached to it. So just stupid moves. Literally, all we've done is shot ourselves in the foot. And because we're dumb, apparently we had the foot up around our head in a yoga pose. So when we shot ourselves in the foot, we shot ourselves in the head while we're at it. This is stupid in the extreme.
All right. Next question comes. Well, let me do it this way. Next question comes from Manny Five in Fairfax, Virginia. RT on the 5th of May published this news. U.S. froze military aid shipment to Israel. Do you know anything about this?
Only what I've read and heard in the news, that the Biden administration, in an effort to put pressure on Israel not to move into Rafah, has frozen a military shipment that was supposed to be sent, as it said, back in October. It was held up because Congress didn't release the money. Now Congress has released the money, but Biden's saying, not so fast. We need Israel to do certain things in Gaza, and if they don't, we don't release the money. And Israel wouldn't do it. We haven't released the money. Now Israel's gone into Rafah, and let's see what the consequences are.
Okay. Let's take a voicemail message from Joe Bloggs about a possible civil war.
Hi, Scott. Please, could you explain the civil war in the Central African Republic and the roles that both Russia and America play in that region? Thanks.
I mean, I could take a stab at it, and I know enough that my stab would probably be right, but in the interest of not being contradicted on live on TV, I'm going to put that dreaded asterisk next to it, and I'm going to do a deep dive. And on Friday, I will answer your question the way it deserves to be answered, where I'm not guessing, I'm not speculating, I'm not drawing upon incomplete and perhaps, wrong information. If I'm going to speak on a subject, I'd like to make sure that there's at least a foundation of fact involved. And so let me go accumulate that fact. Let me chew on it, and I will I'll get back to you. I hope you can respect
that. Asterisk.
There it is.
Alex Jones in Malmo, Sweden, says Turkey has halted all trade with Israel. What do you think the implications of this action will be? Is this a serious action taken by Mr. Erdogan, or is it just a move to please voters after the local election setback for his party?
First of all, I just want to say Malmo. Back in 2007, I attended a Swedish firefighting academy outside of Malmo, and it was a week-long academy, elite firefighting. And then at the end of it, I got to do a three-day operational ride-along with the Malmo Fire Brigade. And I bunked with them and went out on the calls with them for three glorious days, learned a whole bunch about Swedish firefighting, and learned a great deal of respect for the Swedes and for the city of Malmo, which has a very difficult existence based upon some of the refugees that are there, the Muslim community that doesn't totally interface properly with traditional Swedish community. A lot of arson fires. We responded to numerous arson fires while I was there. Anyways, if Turkey was serious about sanctioning Israel, they would have sanctioned Israel before. Now, the only reason why they are is, as the gentleman said, it's because Erdogan suffered a setback at the regional elections, the local elections. And one of the reasons why he suffered the setback is that he was held to account for not standing up for the people of Gaza, for continuing to make money for. But, Erdogan's in a difficult spot. The Turkish economy sucks. And one of the few bright spots was its trade relationship with Israel, where they were making some money. But I think politics, trumps everything. And he's a man that recognized that, he was heading towards a political disaster, potential vote of no confidence kind of stuff with his political party. So he took the only step that only he could do. But I would also point out this, that Azerbaijan continues to transit oil and gas through Turkey to Israel, and Turkey gets fees associated with that. So the idea that Turkey's not making any money off of Israel is ludicrous. This is purely a political move.
All right. Scott, our partner Michael in China tells me that we're continuing to build a nice audience there. And he sent along some comments from the Chinese viewers there. Let's just take a quick look at some of them. Other conflicts are small matters. The U.S. empire is pressing China step by step. This is the biggest thing of human civilization. China is currently tolerating the U.S. empire to provoke, but the Americans must understand that when they can no longer bear it. The Chinese's counterattack will be fatal. The sky will fall apart, and those militants of the U.S. empire, please do it themselves.
Well, I don't like being threatened as an American, but I mean, I guess maybe we deserve it. So,
Here's a warmer, a more innocuous one. Really glad to see you guys here. I'm a big fan of Scott at, I guess that's YouTube, or maybe it's something in China. I don't really know what that
maybe means. YTB is the Chinese abbreviation for Ask the Inspector. I don't know.
The clause is only interpretation of the weak, and the real rights must be maintained by strength. That must be one of those proverbs where you have to kind of like...
Sun Tzu, maybe.
All right. Just a couple more here. Fon Talker Rich says, awesome.
Well, that is. We are all about awesomeness here.
Do you know how to say awesome in Chinese, Scott?
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you've done your homework. What? Say it again.
Let me show it to you. Have you ever read something like even spelled out in American style letters and still not been able to say it?
Yeah, most English language is that way to me. So
that's the word for awesome.
Jingrinde?
It doesn't sound like that's what she's saying, does it?
Jingrinde.
Jingrinde.
Oh, yeah, now it does, finally. Yeah, Jingrinde.
Jingrinde.
That's awesome. All right. And
I like that. Jeff, jingren da, baby.
So now we have two Chinese words we know.
Jingren da. Jingren da.
And ni hao. All right. I think there was one more.
I need the Chinese to tell me, make sure that when I do this, I'm not insulting anybody because I don't know what this means in China. For us, it's okay. It's shaka. It's good.
Diver Tassadar. Very good video. I don't know which one they're referring to, but... thanks for the compliment. And lastly, Huai 6699. The thought of Israel attacking the U.S. port or ship is crazy.
But they've done it.
Yeah. All right. So glad to be in touch with our friends in China. Let's get back to the other question.
Jingrinde.
Yes, it is. It is. Indeed, it is. It would be even more if we could all be on the same channels at the same time, but we're doing the best we can. Samar and Beirut, what are the most expected coming scenarios between Hezbollah Lebanon and the Zionist entity known as Israel in the near future? If the war between them escalates, what could be the result on both sides?
I mean, ultimately the worst result would be if it was a general war between Hezbollah and Israel, in which case it would become existential in nature. Both sides would be fighting to destroy the other. And my feeling is that Hezbollah has thought this thing through, and they will be able to inflict a lot of damage on Israel, damage, and that will be difficult for Israel to overcome unless they escalate to a degree that could promote or provoke an Iranian intervention. And now we have a regional war, which we thought we had avoided by the exchange of attacks that took place back in April 14th and 15th. So with the gangs of Rosengard. Hitch a ride along with the gangs of Rosengard. Then you'll have both sides of the story. Dude, I only wanted one side, firefighter side. That's all I care about. The alarm goes off, there's a fire. We don't give a damn. You know, if the politics behind it, it's just about putting the fire out. But all I know is that at least one occasion we had to retreat from the fire because the people who set it didn't want us to come and put it out. So they were throwing stuff and, you know, it got ugly. But firefighters don't have agendas except to save lives and put out fires. So I don't need the other side of the story if it's dealing with fire. If it's about a political story, if I want to go, you know, ride with these people and find out, I mean, what are they? Are they Muslims? To ride and listen to them? I mean, I think I have a good idea of what they're coming from, but sure, I'd do that. But I don't pit anybody against firefighters. It's the purest form of service anybody can provide, because your job is to run into a burning building and save whoever's inside there, regardless of their religion, ethnicity, gender, whatever. It doesn't matter. If there's a breathing body in there, you get it. And that's why I really like firefighters and liked being a firefighter. And I just avoided the answer to the question, which was about what? I forgot the question. Oh, war, broad scale war. Hopefully it won't escalate that. Look, we saw when Israel went into Rafah, they immediately began a military operation against Hezbollah, sort of a warning. Hezbollah will respond by taking out Israeli sites, and you'll continue what I believe is a sort of a war of escalation without committing to, you know, total war, general war. So that's what I think is going to happen with Hezbollah, is that Israel and Hezbollah just continue to exchange fire and what looks and sounds like a war, but isn't quite the full-scale war that nobody wants.
Richard Tuil, that might be the pronunciation. I'm sorry if it's not. Will Mark Rutte become Secretary General of NATO? And if so, why?
I mean, he could. He's a candidate. I would hope that he wouldn't, because he's a hard anti-Russian right-wing person who his motivations and prejudices can only get NATO in more trouble. So, but right now we're in a situation where NATO needs to look tough, and he's a guy that will posture as a tough man. And there's some in NATO that seem to find that attractive. So we could see a scenario where the former prime minister of the Netherlands, who was a failed prime minister of the Netherlands, is suddenly the head of NATO.
Dave in Olympia, Washington, with the bellicose statements from NATO member states against Russia, the talk of getting Georgia into NATO, regardless of how unrealistic, and the current state of the war in Ukraine, do the Russians now calculate that they have no choice but to capture all of Ukraine and exert control for the foreseeable future?
There's no doubt in my mind that Russia has made a decision that Ukraine will not survive this conflict in its current shape or form. They've put Zelensky, Poroshenko, the former president, many members of Zelensky's cabinet and inner circle on a list of wanted criminals. You don't negotiate with wanted criminals. It's important that they did this so that you understand where the Ukrainian government stands when it comes to potential negotiations. Russia left that door open for a long time, and Ukraine made the decision not to go through that door. Words mean everything in Russia. The Russian defense minister recently spoke of Russia going over on the offensive. Prior to that, the language that was being used was active defense, things of that nature. But the concept was that Russia was involved in defensive fighting, which means that Russia wasn't looking to be in the business of territorial acquisition, that Russia was open to the notion of a negotiated settlement that retained Ukraine as a sovereign entity. Not anymore. Russia's over on the offensive. And I think this, and then the entire Ukrainian government's been put on the most wanted list. It's over. Russia won't stop. Now, are they going to physically occupy all of Ukraine? I don't know. They're going to destroy the Ukrainian military, and they're going to destroy the Ukrainian government, and whatever replaces them will be significantly demilitarized, denazified, and definitely pro-Russian. How that gets done in terms of Russian troops going in and occupying, I don't know. I would imagine that there would be some sort of presence, especially along the borders, to seal off the borders. But, you know, whether Russia needs to physically occupy everything or just have a create like a Vichy France type scenario, we'll see.
All right. Who would be the debate partner there, Marcus? That's the question. Red-headed gal somewhere on the West Coast. We don't even know of what country. I have seen a brief video on social media of two car accidents affecting members of the Israeli cabinet and have since heard nothing else in the news regarding this. If this is true, who do you believe is responsible?
I don't know who the second car accident is. I saw one that had the National Security Advisor, the I can't remember his name. He's a raving lunatic, Zionist, right-wing fanatic, was in a car accident, and he was slightly injured and sent to the hospital and subsequently released. So he's there. If you've ever been to Tel Aviv, you know that on occasion the Israelis drive like maniacs. And so, you know, wouldn't surprise me that on occasion somebody seeks to run a red light when they shouldn't, or try to force a yellow light and ends up going through an intersection while somebody's, you know, either not paying attention or, you know, predicting a green light, and boom, there you go, accident. This looks like a straight up, you know, intersection-based car accident that he was injured in. I don't know about the second one. I don't read anything into it except that, you know, the guy was in a car, got hit, and he got injured.
All right. As Elvis Costello says, accidents will happen. Next question comes from Fu in Chicago. Do you think Victoria Nuland was fired so the U.S. can gradually abandon Ukraine and pivot to Taiwan instead?
Yes. In short, yes. I think that she was told that the policies that she had been previously told to implement were no longer viable policies for a number of reasons, and that she needed to tone down both what she was saying and in terms of what she was trying to promote in terms of expectations amongst Ukraine and our Western NATO allies. She, according to some news sources, continued to put pressure on the Pentagon to do things that were now out of step with White House policy guidance. Some speculation that she was involved in promoting directly or indirectly the terrorist attack in Moscow. And I think if you put all these pieces together, Victoria Nuland had become inconvenient to the Biden administration because she was pursuing an extreme policy that was no longer in vogue. And so, yeah, she was relieved of her duties so that Biden could move on with the overall objective of getting Ukraine out of this conflict so the United States could de-emphasize Europe and put more emphasis on confronting China over Taiwan and the Pacific.
Salam in Spokane. Will Iran be a superpower within 20 years, seeing how they are evolving fast?
Be a regional superpower. They're already a regional superpower. But to be a global superpower, I don't think so. First of all, Iran currently doesn't have global superpower ambition. Second of all, you know, power projection. To be a superpower, you have to be able to project meaningful power, sustainable meaningful power anywhere in the world at any time. Iran's not there to do that. I think that Iran, however, will be a regional player and one that has a role that will expand into Central Asia in ways that are not thought of in the West. So Iran will become a bigger power, a more influential power, but the idea of being a superpower, I don't see that.
Ray in San Diego. Agitators violently attacked the UCLA student encampment, which led to the encampment's forced removal. What organizations do you think the agitators were a part of?
I mean, it's the usual suspects, but, you know, I'm not going to say because I can get sued, I guess, for, you know, saying because I don't have any evidence. But I mean, there's plenty of
Does it rhyme with Schmoros?
No, that's not an organ. That's an individual. I mean, Soros money is everywhere. I think Soros money is definitely involved in this. But going to say other organizations, but I don't have any evidence of their direct involvement. I would just say that the people that are involved in these kind of things, if you study where they traditionally align with and where they get their money, I think you can find out who did it. But in this day and age, I'm not scared of, you know, Zionists or anything like that. I just don't want a lawsuit for, you know, painting somebody with a paintbrush that they don't, you know, maybe they didn't earn. So I'm going to hold off on naming names and just say the usual suspects.
All right. Our favorite weapons inspector is being very prudent, very careful, very discreet. Nothing wrong with that. John Paul, George and Ringo in Dallas, Texas. Does an EMP, that stands for electromagnetic pulse, Scott, just so you know, have the capability to render a nuclear launch site inoperable?
In theory, no. In theory, we should have hardened all of the electronics. We should have buried cables and things of that nature. In reality, maybe they can fry critical communications, but these were designed, these nuclear launch sites and the, you know, launch, you know, silos and the missiles inside were all designed to survive a large-scale EMP event, along with, the whatever effects there are of the actual nuclear blast. So, no, I don't think the EMP. Now, here's an interesting question. Yeah, it all depends on the shielding. But like I said, these things were designed in the 70s to survive, you know, multi-megaton detonations. So there's that. An interesting question comes out. What happens when the missile's launched and going through? The Russians spend a lot of time on their mobile missiles, making the missiles so that they can be launched through the debris field that's created. For instance, if you drop a megaton bomb over here to take out, you know, missiles, but it doesn't take out these missiles, but now they've spewed a whole bunch of stuff into the air, and you're dealing with conditions where you not only have high radioactivity injected into the air, but you have debris. And so this missile's taking off, and it's got to literally bore its way through what has become like an asteroid belt. And so it's got to go through there. So the construction of the Russian missile is designed to be able to take multiple hits to get through there and survive. And the other thing is that the system itself is designed to be subjected to a tremendous amount of radiation and still function. So, that's the other aspect of shielding. And I don't know if the American missiles are shielded in that way or not.
Scott, do you believe in redemption?
It depends.
The potential. What if it's a call from Mark in Ireland?
Sure.
Hello, Mark.
How you doing, Jesse? Keeping well?
We believe, Scott and I believe in redemption.
Oh, that's good. I believe in free speech. The Carolina Act, which you haven't brought up for a long time, Scott, do you think that basically Russia might have actually mentioned this to both the foreign minister of France and the UK when they brought him in for now, a bit of a chat? And do you think America might walk back their vote in the UN about the sort of the anti, they didn't support the Russian vote for anti-fascism and the glorification, if they're supposed to be so anti or so supportive of Israel, along with the 52 countries that voted against that vote in the UN in November of last year and the previous year.
Yeah, he was trying to stop, but he couldn't stop. He had to go. All right, Mark. We love you, Mark.
Call any, listen, guys.
Call anytime.
Keep up the good work.
All right.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Love you.
The Caroline Act if we're talking about the same one, I quote it often in the context of Article 51, the legitimate right of self-defense. And it's basically an act that empowers a nation to undertake not just self-defense, but preemptive self-defense. And so if the Russians were quoting it to France and in the UK, it was to say, if you guys are, you know, you've made statements, declaratory statements, France is going to deploy troops into Ukraine, which is a red line, and that the Great Britain has said we've given Ukraine permission to use the Storm Shadow to strike strategic targets in Russia. And I think the Russians would have every right to call them in, read them the Riot Act, and then say, you guys have made declaratory statements, and if you, unless you reverse them under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, you know, derived from interpretations of the law that are linked to the Caroline Act or the Caroline decision, which is an American decision, by the way, you know, about how the British attacked an American ship in the 1840s, I believe, that was involved in smuggling rebels into Canada. They preemptively took it out because it posed an imminent threat, and it's been cited under international law ever since. So I think Russia would be absolutely in their right to mention this, whether or not, or were they just told the French and the British, you know, if this happens, we hold you accountable, and we're going to take out targets in England, in France, and elsewhere that are linked to this. So it's your job to, it's incumbent upon you not to do it. And just to remind you that meanwhile, Russia is carrying out an exercise of its tactical nuclear weapons in the special, in the Southern Military District, which is the military district primarily involved in the Ukraine conflict. And I think the Russians are letting everybody know that, you know, if the British are stupid enough to allow the Ukrainians to send storm shadows against the Kerch Bridge or other targets deep in Russia, and Russia takes out targets in England, if NATO is dumb enough to invoke Article 5 and start bombing Moscow, that NATO will cease to exist because Russia will use tactical nuclear weapons and take them out. And the Russians don't bluff. So this is not just something that could happen. It's something that will happen.
All right.
People want to know where they can get this t-shirt, the Waging Peace t-shirt. This was a unique production for the second trip, but maybe we could talk about turning that into a t-shirt that could be sold on merchandise, part of our trilogy concept, since Jeff and I are leaving next month for the greatest trip ever in the history of trips ever. Ask the Inspector goes to Russia, the Russia tour. We are going to see parts of Russia that have never been visited by Ask the Inspector before. I can't say by Americans, but we're going to go places, to be honest, that most Russian studies majors would have to go, where, what? What? Where are you going?
From the Pacific Ocean to the Baltic Sea and everything in between.
Everything in between.
Yeah. This is let me put it this way.
We're going to start in red. We're then going to go to red. Then we're going to go to blue. Then we're going to go to white. Then we're going to go to blue. Then we're going to go to red, 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 blue, blue, white, 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 blue, white, blue, red. Guys, we're everywhere. The map, we are everywhere on this map.
All right, the t-shirt is black, and that is what's on the back of it. And this is what's on the front. It's a small image on the front, but I blew it up
so people could see what it is.
It's like that size, right?
It's basically a target, so if they want to shoot for your heart, right here, man. Bam.
And we have different versions for men and women. So, Yelena, we're going to get you a women's version. Yelena moved, and she's back with us today. Let's say hello to Yelena. How you doing, darling?
Hello. I'm fine, thanks.
Where did you move?
To another place. I'm living in the center of the village now.
But we liked your old view because it changed. You could start in daylight and then end up in darkness, and you would disappear. But now you've got a boring bookshelf in the back. We used to have a nice vista. What do we do?
I have a green
screen. He has a better internet connection, though.
You have a better internet connection. There you go.
Yelena, you want to pick a question or two? We have a couple of minutes left from the audience that came in on one of the social media channels.
I have started a lot, but now I'm thinking what is worth asking. Scott, did you watch Putin's speech today? There was a question.
I did watch it. I got up at an ungodly hour in the morning, and I watched it, and then I did a video in response to it that was published on Sputnik. And then they turned that video into a larger article. That seems to be the way I work with Sputnik. They used to have me write, but now they've decided that they're going to get a whole bunch out of it. So I do a video, and then so they get multiple products out of it. Very good marketing on their part. They pay the same rate, but they get like three different products. God, these guys are good. But it was a very good speech. I think the speech itself was very short, to the point, but what he said, everybody should just stand up and listen. But this is literally a new Russia that's about to be born. Just so everybody knows that as soon as he was sworn in, the entire Russian government resigned. That's normal. Prime minister on down. The only people who don't resign are the security people, the defense minister, the foreign minister, people of that nature. Those are appointed by the president in conjunction with the federal council. But everybody else, the government, which includes all the governors, because the president appoints governors, everybody resigned. And I'm here to predict that not too many of them are going to be invited back. That most of them will be told, thank you very much. Here's your pension. Goodbye. Because Putin said a couple things. One, he has redefined Russia. Now, he's talked about, you know, they passed a foreign policy last summer that talks about the change of, you know, Russia is now a great civilization. The Russian, you know, based upon its religion, its history, its culture, it's second to none in the Russian eyes. You know, Russia's fallen in love with being Russian again. They're proud of being Russian now. They no longer feel inferior to the West. But there's a whole bunch of Russia. Remember, Putin inherited a broken nation in the 1990s that was thoroughly infected with, you know, Western poison. And he was never able to, you know, purge Russia of that. But this war changed everything, because this war has created a new sense of patriotism that is defined by service to the nation. See, Russia, whoa, alarmed. That was the alarm. I was asking myself, why didn't my alarm go off at 4 a.m. This morning? Why did I have to have Maverick wake me up?
Well, now you know.
Now we know. It was set for 4 p.m. But you know, the Russia today is defined by service to the nation. You know, there were a lot of people in government that never fully got behind this war. A lot of them are governors. A lot of them are mayors. A lot of them are people that think, oh, I've got my little sinecure here, my government job that'll last forever. And it won't. In fact, I'm going to bet that none of the people that didn't get behind this conflict 100% are going to be in power anymore. He said, Russia will be governed by the heroes of this war. So welcome to the new Russia, ladies and gentlemen, a deeply patriotic Russia, where, you know, to be qualified to lead, you have to give to the country. And the other thing about this war is there's zero tolerance for corruption, zero. And you've already seen some arrests. The deputy defense minister got arrested for taking a very small bribe. It's a stunning arrest. He sacrificed everything for such a small bribe. One would have to believe that this has been going on for years. And actually, based upon the size of his house, it looks like it has been going on for years. But, you know, but the point is, this corruption, which, you know, was endemic. It's like fighting an infection. You know, if my appendix bursts, I'm going to get sepsis. Normally it kills me. Russia's appendix burst under Yeltsin. Burst, boom. The nation was infected. Putin took it, put it to the emergency room, and got it to live. And then he's spending a lot of time, like 25 years, slowly getting the infection out, trying to get the infection out. But he couldn't make the last move because his medical team disagreed or for whatever reason. Now he's purged. This war has allowed him to get rid of all the naysayers, the oligarchs. They're gone. All those pro-Western businessmen, they're gone. Not because Putin got rid of them. The West sanctioned them to death. So they're gone. And now Putin has basically established a new standard, which is you don't get to sit on the fence. You don't get to have your cake and eat it too. You don't get to sit there and benefit from the new productivity of Russia and not be with Russia. And they're gone. And I think you're going to see a new generation of leaders defined by this conflict. If the West, I don't think the West is ready for what's about to hit it. It's not going to be a violent Russia, but the West continues to labor under the notion that if it just bribes Russia with a big enough bribe, if we just put enough on the table that we can convince the Russians to come back to the dark side, that the Russians are a bunch of weak people who secretly hate Russia and they believe the West is the path to their prosperity, that Russia's dead. Putin just killed it. He's going to create a new Russia. There's no bribe. The West has to learn that if you want to live with Russia, you have to live as equals, and as equals who respect Russia for being Russia. And right now, the West isn't willing to do that. Putin doesn't care. Putin is building the Russia that's going to be in place. And remember, he's 71 years old. Most Russians remember back in the Soviet era, you know, when leaders held on to power for too long. Brezhnev became this just mumbling, walking joke. I mean, even the Russians just made fun of Brezhnev every time he spoke because he couldn't speak. He died. Andropov came in. He, same age, but he had cancer. He died. Replaced by Chernyenko, who was probably dead when they appointed him. I mean, not literally, but I mean, he was not alive. And so he's gone. And then, you know, Gorbachev came in, but he was surrounded by old dinosaurs too. And basically they aged themselves out. They saw Boris Yeltsin come up and become drunk and incompetent in age. Putin today is fully, you know, physically capable, mentally capable of leading this, of leading Russia. And he will. 71. He's very, I hope that I'm that active and together when I'm 71. But, you know, in 10 years, he's 81. 81-year-old people don't lead. I'm sorry, Joe Biden, Donald Trump. You know, they don't, they're not going to do well. You get old. Stuff happens. Even Vladimir Putin's going to get old. He has 6 years to turn Russia into something that can survive after Putin. And he's going to do that because he's building a nation of heroes, a nation of Russians, a nation that believes in Russia. Maverick believes in Russia. Maverick is auditioning right now for the role of governor of whatever little dog republic you have out there where little Pomeranians can run together in peace with in harmony with Chihuahuas. But so this inauguration speech, I keep trying to tell people that I work with in the West, you got to start paying attention to what's going on in Russia, because just because we don't listen to it in the West doesn't mean it's not important and it's not happening. It's going to be earth-shattering. Right now, everybody's paying attention to Xi Jinping going to France as if the meeting between Xi Jinping and Emmanuel Macron is the most important meeting in the world. No, ladies and gentlemen, the most important meeting in the world is going to take place later this month when Vladimir Putin goes to China and meets with Xi Jinping. That's what happens when two people who get along with each other, who like each other, who are working in concert with each other, have shared visions, get together. France has been giving China the thumb in the eye, trying to tell China that if you don't do what we want, we're going to do what? Europe is a has-been. America's in the verge of becoming a has-been. If you want to be up there playing with the big team, with the big dog, you want to run with the big dog, you got to be aware of what the big dogs are doing. So you have to pay attention to what's happening. This is why I'm going to the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum next month. It's why I'm going to the Moscow International Security Conference in August. It's why I'm going to the BRICS conference in Kazan in October, because those are the three places to be. That's where it's going to be happening. The center of the universe is going to be there. Not in America. Sorry. It doesn't revolve around Washington, D.C. anymore. There's no guarantee of Russian success, but you have to at least, you know, be aware of what's going on, cognizant of what Russia's trying to accomplish, and respectful of the fact that Russia's serious about accomplishing it.
All right, Scott, we're over the limit, but there's one person who's holding. Want to take one phone call, and we'll run the three-minute clock on it?
Sure.
All right. Hi, what's your question for our favorite weapons inspector?
Hello, Jeff and Scott. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good. Jeff, I have a question for you. First of all, congratulations on the new website. Everything's consolidated and right there, you know. But I didn't sleep last night very much because Russia's comments relative to tactical nukes being tested, you know? My question to you is this. If you had the doomsday clock, would have you moved it up, and to what degree yesterday? Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I've talked about this before, and I'll say it again. I would keep the doomsday clock at about 1 millisecond away from midnight. Why? Because that's all we got. We've already passed the point of, you know, any buffer zone, rational thinking. When nuclear war happens, it's going to happen that quick. And we're literally living in the moments where, as I said before, what are your plans for Christmas? Don't make any, because there ain't going to be a Christmas. What are your plans for this summer? Who cares? You know, Jeff and I may be sitting there in, you know, the middle of Russia going, man, that's a brilliant sunset right before we vaporize, because we're at nuclear war. The stupidity of the West in not taking seriously Russia's, you know, warnings that Ukraine is a red line. If you send troops in Ukraine, it's a war with NATO. Boom. The alarm is still going off because I hit the snooze button. I hit it again, so it's going to go off again. But the point is, you know, France, you can't send troops to Ukraine. If you do, you're going to be attacked. England, you don't get to fire Storm Shadow missiles using a proxy against Russia. If you do, you're going to be attacked. You're going to be attacked by Russia, and they're going to hit you where it hurts. And then you're going to turn to NATO and say, oh, we were attacked, Article 5. And if NATO's dumb enough to go, oh, Article 5, then what do we have to do? We have to launch a strategic strike against Russia, but it won't be nuclear. The second you launch a strategic strike against Russia, Russia's going to hit you with tactical nuclear weapons. And when I say hit you, I mean goodbye Paris, goodbye Berlin, goodbye Brussels, goodbye London, Rome. You're all going to go, do svidaniya. And then Russia's going to turn to the United States and say, you want to keep going? Because we're ready. We made the decision. Putin has said all the relevant decisions have been made. There is nothing left to discuss inside Russia. Okay? It's on full freaking automatic. And I don't think the West gets it. They somehow believe that Russia's bluffing, that Russia's weak. And Russia, you know, Russia's not weak. Russia's winning the war. That's another reason why NATO's panicking. And Russia's testing their ability to launch tactical nuclear weapons. It ain't a bluff, guys. Hopefully the French and the British ambassadors got the message when they got called in to the foreign ministry and read the Riot Act. Hopefully they got reported back to their respective capitals and the appropriate policy decisions are being made to back the blank down. Because otherwise, literally, we are, you know, 1/1,000,000th of a second away from the end of the world. Because it could happen at any moment.
Pick your city.
Pick your city.
That has applicability globally, not just how you originally said it. You were referring to the U.S. way back when. All right, that'll do it for the lightning round. And join us Friday night for the loquacious version at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you, Yelena. Good to have you back. Thanks to our beloved audience. And don't forget to watch the Scott Ritter Show tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can watch it at our website, scottritter.com. or on any of the other social channels where we stream. And Scott would like to make a closing comment. Surely.
And don't forget to buy the tour shirt. There's a reason why we're selling the tour shirt now. And that's to raise money for the tour so that Jeff doesn't have to sleep on a cot outdoors, so that we can afford to put Jeff in a hotel, so that Jeff doesn't have to eat expired MREs, that we can put Jeff in a restaurant and feed him pelmeni. And, you know, the same with me. We're going on this trip. This trip is happening, but it's 45 days. We're going to get a lot done, but nothing happens for free. And any support that you guys can provide to make this trip an even greater success than it's going to be is greatly appreciated. And one way that you can help us out is buying the Real Russia Tour t-shirt, which is stylish, it's historic, you're going to be part of something, you can wear it with pride, and by buying it, you will actually be contributing to the greater good. So That's it, Jeff. That's the best marketing pitch I could give to the t-shirt. All we need now is Yelena to model the women's cut.
All right. Did we send it to you yet, Yelena? I'm not sure, but if we will.
I don't know. I'm waiting for a cap.
Oh, all right. I remember I sent you a cap. All right. We'll get it, anything you want. Take care, everybody. See you on Friday night. And don't forget the Scott Ritter Show tomorrow night at 9 p.m. at scottritter.com. Bye-bye.